We've been looking at a number of festivals that the Jewish people observed during their time, and we saw a lot of the significance in the New Testament, because a lot of those festivals, like Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread and so forth, had some kind of analogies to some of the things in the New Testament, Day of Atonement and several others. We're going to talk now about some years that were special to them. Some years that were special. These are found in Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus chapter 25. And of course, these were things that Jesus observed during his 30-some years on earth. Leviticus chapter 25. And would someone read, if you don't mind reading, the first seven verses? Leviticus 25, verses 1 through 7.
And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. For it grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it is a year of rest for the land. And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, your male and female servants, your hired man and the stranger who dwells with you, for your livestock and the beasts that are in your land, all its produce shall be for food."
Okay. Let's talk about that for a minute. Remember, we already talked about the Sabbath day. Occurred, you know, every 7 days there was the Sabbath, which represented the end of the week for them. Had significance to the Israelites because, first of all, God rested from His work of creation. Okay? So the idea of Sabbath means a rest. And of course, for God, He wasn't tired. That just meant that's when He stopped. He created days 1 through 6. Day 7, no more creating. So He stopped what He had been doing for 6 days. So in a similar fashion, that's what the Israelites were to do. They went about their regular business 6 days, and then on the seventh day, they ceased from their regular business, and then started all over again. Well, in a similar fashion, they did that with the land every 7 years. So 6 years, they did the regular stuff, you know, planting and sowing and reaping and pruning and all that stuff. For 7 years, just normal agricultural type of work. But then when the seventh year came around, they didn't do any of that. There wasn't any new planting or new sowing or new pruning or weeding or any of that thing. They basically let the land rest. He says it's called a Sabbath for the land. And so that's what it meant. It let the land rest. So there wasn't any of the tilling or any of that stuff that went on. Normally. And so every 7 years, that cycle repeated. Every 7 years, they'd let the land have a rest. And during that time, you go down to verse 6, "The Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, and for your servants, your stranger, for your livestock, so forth. All its produce shall be for food." When you look at the other places that talk about this, there's several places in the Old Testament that talk about this. They were not to, in any way, till the land in any way, not prune it, not weed it. Just whatever grew, grew, because it was going to grow. Okay, just because you stopped weeding it or pruning it, you know, the olive trees were still going to produce olives. There were still going to be wheat, and whatever that was produced, that's what you were supposed to eat. But you were not supposed to plant any new. You weren't supposed to till it in any way or prune it. Just whatever came on the land, and that's what they were fed. Okay? And the strangers, the livestock, all of them had to eat from that during that seventh year. That would probably scare us today, wouldn't it? You know, we plant for 6 years, and then the seventh year, you mean we have 365 days. The only thing we can have is just what's produced naturally. But see, what was the purpose of that seventh year?
It's good farming practice.
Okay, yeah, it's very good farming practice, right? A lot of people don't do that today because they want that seventh year for more money. But
well, we've got chemicals.
Right.
And fertilizer.
Okay. Right.
And
all those things, right.
Did not have
yeah,
available.
Absolutely. What would it do for the Israelites?
A little bit of sacrifice.
Okay, definitely. And when we get to the year of Jubilee, we'll see it even more so. They had to simplify their lives, didn't they? Very much, because they wouldn't have near the harvest that they normally had. What would it do as far as them as a nation and Jehovah?
It shows they respect them.
Okay. And what else?
Well, they would have to trust that he would make sure they would have enough food.
Yeah, absolutely. Shows their concern, their respect, their trust in him, because they weren't allowed to do any of those regular things. You know, you'd be tempted, oh, that needs to be weeded or that needs to be pruned or whatever. Weren't supposed to touch it. Okay? You leave it alone. So a lot of it goes back to believing and trusting in God when he says, do your normal stuff for 6 years, but the seventh year, none of it. You let it alone. Just whatever comes naturally, you use that. And see, they had to trust God for that. That probably would have been tough for a lot of people. You know, we're so self-reliant, or we think we are. We think we're self-reliant. We're really not self-reliant, but we think we are. And so we maybe sometimes don't trust God like or to the extent that we should. So that would go on. 6 years of regular farming practices, then they stop for a year. Then they start it back up again. Now, there's another special year that doesn't happen very often, beginning in verse 8. And you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself. 7 times 7 years, and the time of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years. Then, okay, after that, you've gone through 7 cycles, and then the next year it says, you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, which is what? On the Day of Atonement. You shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. So, every, basically 50 years was a very special year. So you plant for 6 years, rest. So that's a total of 7. Plant for 6, rest on the 7th. Now we've got up to 14. Okay, we keep doing that for 49 years. Okay? At the end of that 49th year is a Sabbath year. So you didn't do anything then. The next year, you don't do anything either. And that's really getting scary. Okay? When that 50th year started, after you went through your 49 years on the beginning, the Day of Atonement, and of course that was the of days, if you want to call it that, for the Israelites, you know, all the things that happened on that day, all the sacrifices and what the high priest had to go through, and remember he chose the 2 goats and killed one, sent the other one off. So all of that is happening on the Day of Atonement. When that's over, basically, then you start this year of Jubilee. And basically the Hebrew word that's translated Jubilee here means a blowing of a horn. So this blowing of the horn started this year of Jubilee, this 50th year. So that's where we are. Verse 10, and you shall consecrate the 50th year. Okay? The idea of consecrate again means, you know, make it holy, set it aside for a very special purpose, and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family. Now this was, you know, they've just observed the Day of Atonement, which would be the saddest day, saddest time of the year. It's when they remember all the sins of the entire year. Then right after that, the year of Jubilee starts. A time of there's reflection that goes on during this year. We'll see in a little bit. There's a lot of things that happen during this 50th year. Okay? And of course, some people would live and die and never get to observe a 50th year, obviously, or a year of Jubilee. But it was supposed to be set aside. And one thing that was important was it was a year of liberty. It was a time of freedom, I guess you'd want to call it. I have got Isaiah chapter 61:1 marked here. And I wrote that down yesterday. Oh, yeah. Isaiah 61, verse 1. And this is the idea of, he says, proclaim liberty through all the land. Well, Isaiah 61:1 is a prophecy about Jesus, about the Messiah, and what the Messiah would do. Notice what it is. Isaiah 61:1. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Now think, does anybody remember when Jesus quoted that? Or the context? It was early in his ministry, very early in his ministry. Remember what was going on? He's in the temple.
Is this Luke 4:18?
Yeah, Luke chapter 4. Picks the scroll up, unwinds and starts reading Isaiah 61 verse 1. And he says, now, this day, that has been fulfilled. So what Jesus came to do spiritually is what the year of Jubilee did physically for the Israelites. They were set free physically. Jesus said he's coming to set you free spiritually. So there's a good comparison between what the year of Jubilee did physically for God's people and what Jesus has done for us spiritually. That's what he's done. He's proclaimed liberty to us. That's what the gospel does. It liberates us. It frees us. And it's what Jesus did. So that's what he... This year of Jubilee was to proclaim liberty. And each of you shall return to his possession. Remember, there were, 12 tribes, and they were all going to be in different areas and all of that, the 12 different tribes, and they would, of course, be displaced for various reasons. And, well, this every 50 years then, they went back to their original land from their family, wherever that happened to be. You return to your family. That 50th year, verse 11, shall be a jubilee to you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it's the jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. Now, remember this last year, the 49th year, was a Sabbath year, so they didn't do any planting or sowing. Now, if it's the year of Jubilee, they have a whole nother year. No planting, no sowing, no tilling, no pruning, no weeding, nothing. They went through 1 year, now they're going through two. So this is a time that God, He uses the word Sabbath for a reason, because they were to rest from their normal activities. Especially so they could focus on Him. Focus on worship, focus on their spiritual lives, focus on each other in that sense. Because they were free from doing what they normally did, which basically revolved around agriculture. And so God said, cease from all of that. Because that's what the people needed. The people needed that. Well, I think we need it too, don't we? We need to cease from our regular activities. When we come together and worship and so forth, we need to be not thinking about our jobs or what's happening tomorrow or whatever. We need to have a Sabbath from our thoughts, our normal thoughts and our working our work, our jobs, whatever, and focus on God. One writer I read this week, I really liked it. He said this year of Jubilee was like having a year of Sundays. That's kind of really what it was. It's a year of Sundays for them, 365 Sundays in a row. They were freed. See, they didn't have to till or anything because they were to do just like the year before. Whatever the land produced normally, the olives and the wheat and whatever came up normally, they just ate it. Same way with their cattle and all that stuff. So they had a whole, they'd gone through one year, then especially this year, was like having a year of Sundays. Where they were free from all of those constraints and so forth, where they could truly focus on God every day. I'm sure their lives weren't easy. You know, they had no modern conveniences of any kind. So it's probably tough. They probably worked many hours every day and probably were pretty tired when the day was over. But being free from all that, then they didn't have to be concerned with it, so they could really focus and be concerned about what God had done for them and think about what God had done for them. Which to me sounds pretty nice. Sounds like a great thing. There's other things involved in this Sabbath year, or year of Jubilee as well. In verse 13, in the year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession, and if you sell anything to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, you shall buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years of crops, he shall sell to you. According to the multitude of years, you shall increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years, you shall diminish its price. For he sells to you according to the number of the years of the crops. Therefore you shall not oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. What's he wanting his people to be? If you summed it up in one word. He wanted them to be fair. Exactly. He wanted them to be fair, right? Want them to be just in their dealings with one another. Don't overcharge. You know, whatever. You know, he tells them exactly, you know, how many years from Jubilee. This is what you're supposed to do. He wants them to treat one another fairly. You know, he uses the word don't oppress. You know, be fair, be just with one another. Don't overcharge. Verse 18, so you shall observe my statutes and keep my judgments and perform them, and you will dwell in the land in safety. There's a promise, right? If you do this, if you observe my statutes, my judgment, you know, my commands, you will dwell in the land in safety. You'll be safe. God will protect you. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and dwell there in safety. There's the promise. God says, if you just obey and follow what I have asked you to do, then not only will you be safe, but the land will produce. It'll yield what you need, whatever that is, whether it was olives or wheat or barley or whatever, or your cattle. It would yield what you needed. Verse 20, and if you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year? Since we shall not sow nor gather in our produce, then I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year, and it will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. Why 3 years? Okay, right. That's you had the 49th year, which you didn't sow, 50th year, which you didn't sow. Well, then you sow in the 51st year, but then you have to wait until the crop comes in. So he says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, as long, there was a condition, right? There was a condition. They had to keep his commandments, keep his judgments. And then he said he would do that so that you would get in that sixth year, all right, the year before they had to start letting the land rest, 3 times the normal produce, so that you would have enough then for those 3 years. But they had to do what God said. It wasn't some sort of, ironclad guarantee. If they didn't do what he had asked, you know, if they oppressed their neighbor, if they overcharged them, if they did whatever, they didn't follow his command, he wasn't going to do that for them. So it was a conditional promise. Like, you know, most of the promises in the Bible are conditional, aren't they? Some aren't. Like the promise that God would send a rainbow, that wasn't any for the flood. That wasn't a condition to that one. Most promises, though, had conditions, like this one. They had to observe it. But if they did, he was going to bless them abundantly so that they wouldn't have to have any worries or cares during those 2 years when they weren't working. We wouldn't be too concerned today about not working for 2 years if the year before we gathered up 3 years worth of salary. Wouldn't be quite so concerned. That rarely happens, but you know, that's kind of what he was telling them there, right? Says, I'll give you 3 years worth of salary so that these next years you don't have to be concerned about those things. If you follow my commands, if you follow my judgments, if you're faithful to me. So they had to do that for that to work. So he says, and you shall sow in the eighth year, okay, the following one, and eat old produce until the ninth year. Until its produce comes in, you shall eat of the old harvest. The land shall not be sold permanently. Here's another main idea of the year of Jubilee. Okay? For the land is mine. That was something he wanted them to remember during the year of Jubilee especially, was that regardless of where they were living or, you know, what land they were on, it really wasn't theirs. It all belonged to him. He allowed them to live there. And so during the year of Jubilee, that was something they remembered the whole year, was that this land isn't really mine. You know, my family and my family and generations before may have all lived here, but it still belongs to the Lord. It's still his. So that was another principle of the year of Jubilee that he wanted to impress upon them. So he says, the land shall not be sold permanently. There was no you buy this and it's yours forever thing. That was not happening. He says, for your strangers and sojourners with me, and in all the land of your possession you shall grant redemption of the land. If one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possessions, and if his redeeming relative comes to redeem it, then he may redeem what his brother sold. And of course, that was a big part of the law of Moses, wasn't it? About the family redeemer and what he could do. So it's mentioned here. So he can redeem what his brother sold. Or if the man has no one to redeem it, but he himself becomes able to redeem it, then let him count the years since its sale, restore the remainder to the man to whom he sold it, that he may return to his possession. But, now here's the case if he can't do that. But if he's not able to have it restored to himself, then what was sold shall remain in the hand of him who has bought it until the year of Jubilee. And in the Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to his possession. See, this year of Jubilee was all about returning things back to where they started. Kind of like returning things back to the original owner sort of thing. But it was really to remind people that all those things were God's. They weren't theirs. He really wanted to impress upon them that idea. You know, we get pretty attached to our stuff, don't we? I do. I get kind of attached to my stuff. I think, wow, this is mine. Look what I did for it. And blah, 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 blah. Well, during the year of Jubilee, God reminded everybody that all that stuff, land and everything else, possessions, really belong to God. So don't become too attached to it. That's kind of a lesson that they were to learn. So, if a man sells a house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it's sold. Within a full year, he may redeem it. But if it's not redeemed within the space of a full year, then the house in the walled city shall belong permanently to him who bought it throughout his generations. It shall not be released in the Jubilee. Now, he makes a distinction here between walled cities and unwalled cities. Notice the next thing. However, the houses of villages which have no wall. So the only difference between a city and a village was a city had a wall, village didn't have a wall. Which have no wall around them shall be counted as the fields of the country. They may be redeemed and they shall be released in the Jubilee. So there's a distinction made between the houses, where they're located, and whether they're released or not. Nevertheless, now here's an exception. The cities of the Levites, and remember they didn't farm land or anything. They were given specific lands and cities. Well, nevertheless, the cities of the Levites and the houses in the cities of their possession, the Levites may redeem at any time. And if a man purchases a house from the Levites, then the house that was sold in the city of his possession shall be released in the Jubilee. For the houses in the cities of the Levites are their possession among the children of Israel. But the field of the common land of their cities may not be sold, for it is their perpetual possession. So the Levites were kind of treated in a little different way, which is not surprising because they were to spend all their time, basically every day, in service to God. So they weren't allowed to go out and buy land or work land or buy cattle and stuff like that. They were simply to work in the temple or work in the tabernacle and do those type of spiritual things all the time. So they weren't permitted to do any of those other things. So they kind of had special privileges, I guess you'd say it. We have time for just a little bit more. If one of your brethren becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him, like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. Take no usury or interest from him, but fear your God, that your brother may live with you. You shall not lend him your money for usury, nor lend him your food at a profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, to give you the land of Canaan, and to be your God. They were to treat their brothers who had become poor very kindly. They weren't to try and extort money. They weren't to charge them interest or anything like that. They were to be very, very helpful and considerate about their brethren who had become poor. And if one of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. As a hired servant and a sojourner he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. And then he shall depart from you, he and his children with him, and shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. You shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but you shall fear your God. Even, you know, specific instructions about how they were to treat someone who had gotten so impoverished, one of their brethren, that they had to basically sell themselves to someone else. But he said, don't you treat them like a slave, like you would someone that wasn't an Israelite. But you treat them like someone that's just working for you, and they work for you until the year of Jubilee, and then all of their stuff, their family and everything's free to go. So pretty explicit directions about how they were to treat their brethren. A little bit more and we'll need to finish. And as for your male and female slaves whom you may have from the nations that are around you, from them you may buy male and female slaves. Moreover, you may buy the children of the strangers who dwell among you and their families who are with you, which they beget in your land, and they shall become your property. And you may take them as an inheritance for your children after you to inherit them as a possession. They shall be your permanent slaves. But regarding your brethren, the children of Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. So there was a distinction between whether someone was an Israelite or not. The ones who were not Israelites, you could make them slaves and keep them forever. But if they were an Israelite, you never treated them as a slave. And then once the year of Jubilee came around, you released them. So there was a very sharp distinction between Israelites and non-Israelites. Which today, you know, the Bible talks so much about how we are to help one another, talking about those in the church. And we need to be concerned about those in the church even more so than others. Especially those of the household of God, right? Paul wrote to the church and churches in Galatia. Especially those of the household of God. So that idea goes all the way back to, you know, the time of Moses. How God's people are to especially be concerned about God's people. And that lesson is still very true for us today. All right. Thank you for your comments, even though I think I kind of did.